you all, you players, dude, dudettes, amigos, amigas, everybody out there. Welcome back. Episode 141, Game of Crimes, 141. I think this one's going to be good too, but 141 stories, many that people have heard and many that people never have heard and they should have heard and now they've heard it.
Can you say that three times in a row quickly?
I just did.
Yeah, this one fits right in, and it's that's what I love about Game of Crimes, man. We bring people on here, heroes mostly, that most people will never hear about. You know, so that's the beauty of the show here is to bring it on. And we don't tell their story. We let them tell their story.
You know, still get comments on Spotify of episodes we did a long time ago. Mundo is, we get a lot of comments about him, a lot of comments. I still get comments about the video we did with Dave Reichert on the Green River Killer.
Wow.
You know, we posted that interview of him over two years ago. And we're still getting views and still getting comments on it. So.
Love it. Love it. So, and to all our listeners, I apologize if my voice sounds screwed up. I was up in D.C. with Morgan, and now I'm in Atlanta, and the tree pollen is kicking my butt.
Yeah.
I might switch down to my Barry White voice here in a little bit.
Barry White. Well, you did come by the house yesterday to pick up some equipment when you were up in this area, and you sounded fine yesterday. I mean, 24 hours, you've gone to shit, pal.
I know it. I know it. I'm taking DayQuil, NyQuil, and I'm going out to get some Flonase, and I might even buy some meth. What the hell, you know? Let's try it all.
Funny you should mention that. We'll talk about that on Small Town Police Blotter.
Uh-oh. I shouldn't have brought that up.
Well, guys, before we get started, hey, guys, leave your comments, leave your suggestions, leave your stars. Head on over to that Apple and Spotify. Hit those stars. Really helps out a lot. Also, head on over to the website, gameofcrimespodcast.com. I'll tell you, when I was adding the last book, I looked through the list, and it's like, I can't believe the number of books we have compared to the number of episodes we have. I mean,
it's like a library.
It is. It should be required reading for everybody out there. So you guys hit our book list up and patronize. You find a book, download it, you know, buy it, get it, help those folks out, especially episode number one, which happened to be, you know, a couple of guys, book. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. You know, some
manhunters.
You know, the whole story about how we kept Pablo's millions and are living off of it to today.
Yeehaw. Yeah. Wait, we weren't supposed to say that out loud, were we?
Oh, no, especially with your accountant, because.
Hey, you know, the cool thing about our books is you and I try to read all the books that our guests write. I mean, Jeff Higgins, that would take me a while to read all his books. But I got to be honest with you, I didn't read this much in college.
Well, you grew up in West Virginia. You couldn't read until you got to DEA, is my understanding.
Well, we have picture books.
Oh, yeah. That's the Marines, too. There we go.
No, those are coloring books.
Coloring books. That's right. Crayons. Big crayons. All right. Well, hey, well, guys, for continued insults, follow us on that thing called social media at Game of Crimes on Twitter, Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and the Instagram. Hey, also, you know, make sure you go to our Facebook page run by Sandy Salvado, our favorite mafia queen, rules with an iron fist with a velvet glove. And we're not going to mention anything about Patreon because that's part of what we're kind of retooling. Murph and I are going to be having a discussion next week. So don't go anywhere, anybody. We're going to have a recap next week. We're going to talk about your trip to Micronesia. We'll talk about a recap of the episodes and what the future is going to look like. So stay tuned for that.
Woohoo!
But remember, folks, this is a show about crime. We talk about bad people doing bad things and bad people doing bad things to good people. We take the story seriously, but
once again, we never take ourselves serious. Let's have some fun.
And how do we know we don't take ourselves seriously besides the fact as we just sling shit at each other all day long? We have this little thing. What's it called, Murph?
It's called Small Town Police Blotter.
And these are all recent stories. April 17th. This is when we're recording this. This is 2 days ago.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's going to be a good one.
A lot of people called 911 for a lot of things. So a lady from Indiana, Sarah Harris, 34, called the police, and during a conversation with the police captain, this is on 911, declared that her meth was not what it was supposed to be. She said the drug left her feeling as if she was having a heart attack. Harris said she had snorted a line of the meth and felt something different when it touched her skin and nostrils. She went on further to say that her and a friend had smoked a bowl of normal meth. I don't know what normal meth is. Before subsequently obtaining the meth that led her to call 911. Apparently believing... I think she thought the sheriff ran a better illegal business bureau, the BIBB. She wanted the drug to be tested. Well, hey, we want to help you out. So the only way to test drugs, have you got a sample?
Bring it in.
She She turned over a sample.
Well, you know, the sheriff's department does offer door-to-door service.
Yes, they do. Free rides, Uber, Lyft, you know, free hots in a cot. Well, the other thing, too, is she was charged with a Class 6 felony for charging her with meth possession. She's got previous, this is going to shock you, previous arrests for theft, meth possession, criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, resisting and operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. An additional charge of aggravated criminal stupidity was dropped out of just, they felt
compassion.
Sorry for her.
Yeah, I was going to say felonious stupidity, but yours sounds better.
Aggravated criminal stupidity, you know? Just,
you know, and you wonder why we say, don't do meth.
Don't do meth, right?
It will make you do stupid things.
Well, speaking of doing stupid things, the other thing besides meth that'll make you do stupid things is alcohol, like that Brad Paisley song, you know, about alcohol, you know, contributed to a lot of things in his youth and growing up.
Oh, yeah.
This happened in Florida, Murph. St.
Good.
Pete.
There he, oh, not St. Pete again, man.
I think it's spring break time. So a gentleman by the name of Wiley, W-Y-L-Y, Wiley James Weeks.
Not Wiley Coyote.
Not Wiley Coyote, and he's not very Wiley when you hear the rest of the story. He said he wasn't subject to arrest. He said he was allowed. He was allowed to be drunk and disorderly and to sit naked in a trash can on the public sidewalk, which is exactly what he was doing.
Buddy, that's what you call a leader and not a follower right there. He's leading the way for all of you that want to sit naked in a trash can.
Well, so he smelled a booze sitting naked in a trash can. The police extricated him from... How'd you like to be the cop that has to go in and extricate a naked dude drunk out of a trash can?
No, thank you. No, thank you.
Well, he was arrested for disorderly intoxication, resisting an officer without violence. But guess what? This wasn't his first time. Apparently, just a few weeks earlier, one of his prior arrests, him and a friend were spotted drunk and naked on a Tampa street after they left a bar. They told the cops they thought it would be funny to strip off their clothes.
I wonder how funny it is now.
Well, when you see his mug photo plastered up there, it's kind of like, dude, nobody wants to see you naked. I'm telling you that right now.
Oh, man. People just, I swear, man, they do the stupidest things.
You know what? That's kind of what people do, the strangest things. I think there's a whole episode there just about people do the stupidest things. So,
yep.
Hey, anyway, so let's talk about now Mario, another gentleman you met. And I got to tell you, you know, we just finished with Tim Madsen. By the way, Tim, when I checked with him, he said, yeah, you can go ahead and keep that one piece in there about he was punching out. He said, I've had it. I'm done. You know, it's all too unfortunate is that many of these folks who have gone through shootings, like Tim did, like what you're going to about Mario, Tim was left high and dry by his own department. Nobody checked on him. Nobody came by. So yep. He said, man, you know, I cannot believe that from an, I mean, his buddies, I think, were checking on, but from an official standpoint, it doesn't seem like anybody cared. One of your own, in one of the most high-profile events in the nation,
yeah,
he was at the State of the Union, and you don't come by and check on the guy? Well, shame on you people.
Absolutely. We're talking about the Pittsburgh Police Department here. You know, we try not to throw agencies under the bus, but when you don't live up to the expectations of taking care of your own people, sorry, we're going to run the bus right over you.
Well, you know, here's another chance to get behind the wheel, Murph.
Yep. So back in February, I went to the, and you got, our regular listeners have heard me talk about this. In February, I went to the third annual Military Appreciation Weekend sponsored by Corps Medical Group and Mel Chansey. Mel Chansey is the former president of the Hells Angels in Chicago, did his federal time in prison, became a Christian, is now living the Christian life, puts out a daily devotional on Instagram. Check him out if you want to hear some good messages. He's not putting on any pretext. He's not pretending to be something he's not, from everything I can tell. And I've been following Mel now for a couple of years, so I think he's all above board. Love the brother. Anyway, got to meet some studs there, and one of the studs I met was Mario Rodriguez, former Detroit police officer. Former Detroit police officer who was shot in the line of duty. Former Detroit police officer who was left to hang by his own agency, as well as the court system. I could go on to tell you more, but you're getting ready to hear a story from him, so I'm not going to tell you what it is. It's extremely disappointing. It should be distressing. I can't even think of enough adjectives to tell you without cursing here, how bad I think Mario's story is. But what a hero, man. He persevered. He's moving on with life. He's doing some great things now. So, once again, Detroit PD, you rank right up there with Pittsburgh PD on this one.
Pittsburgh, man. Yeah. You know, well, anyway, Murph, we're not going to hear about it. And I'm a little worried about you. It's a good thing we went to an interview this week.
Well, I could drop in my lower voice range.
Yeah, my Barry White voice. Well, give us your Barry White voice and tell us, what do we, you know, I got to ask you, are you ready to play the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all? The
Everybody,
Game of Crabs.
Get in, sit down, shut up, and hold on. Yeah,
hold
wait till you hear this story.
On.
It's unbelievable.
All right, the smackdowns are already in progress, apparently, because our next guest couldn't wait to start throwing shade on me. Wong, Morgan Wright, the host with the most hair. I can't believe this. Oh, my God, Murph, who did you line up for us that is already talking shit about troopers?
Well, I brought on a real cop. I mean, this guy actually investigated crimes, not writing tickets and changing tires.
Don't forget, I was a city cop and a detective, too. Don't gloss over that.
They kicked you out. We understand.
Yeah. Let's not talk about the people who couldn't make the highway patrol, and instead the only place they could get hired was DEA. Huh?
Hey,
remember that guy?
Drunk every afternoon, brother.
That's right.
We got a special guest on with us today, everybody. I guess you'd probably like to know who it is, huh?
Nah.
Yeah, I'm just hanging out in the shadows, guys.
Let's do this. Let's do the whole podcast, not tell anybody who it is, and see if anybody can figure it out by the time we're done.
No one's going to know my name.
Trained criminal investigators. You never know.
Yeah.
Now, I had the honor. So you listeners know that I went up to the Military Appreciation Weekend sponsored by Corps Medical Group, Sid Gordon, and Mel Chansey a couple weekends ago and met some studs and studettes there that just, I mean, I was so freaking motivated when I left that weekend. Especially after Cody Alford talked, I told everybody, man, I want to grab an American flag and go kill commies after listening to him.
America.
He is intense.
Yeah, he is.
And he will be a guest on our show at some point. He's already answered back today and said he can't wait to do it. But while we were there, I had the pleasure, Lou Velozzi, and everybody knows Lou. He was guest number four here on the podcast almost 3 years ago. He said, he came running up to me. He said, Murph, you got to meet this guy. This guy was a former Detroit cop. You got to hear his story. So he introduced me to Mario Rodriguez, and that's our guest today. And after I got a little bit of information from Mario, and it took about 20 seconds to say, dude, you got to come on the podcast. Will you tell your story? And he said, yes. So silly him. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll pay me back later, I guess, next year at the Military Appreciation Weekend again. But Mario, welcome, brother. It's an honor to have you here with us today.
No, it's an honor for me, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, I know you're talking to me, but you know, Morgan, don't just yeah.
Just remember, I do all the editing, Murph. You can either sound like a hero or zero when we're done. So
there we go.
That's true. That's
you can make
true,
me sound so. A little better.
You already sound good, man. And by the way, we were just complimenting you. We had setup envy. You've got one of the best setups of any guest we've had on. You've even got the podcast mic with the blue light on to tell everybody you're broadcasting.
Yeah, okay. I figured too. I can actually change the color on it, but I figured since we're talking about police work, I changed it to blue.
Yeah, we got these crappy Shure mics. They don't have little lights on to do that.
I like those ones. Those are good though.
Now these Shures are good. Actually, I used to have that. I used to have the mic boom that had the built-in light so that you could turn it on and say, "Okay, hey, I'm podcasting." But you know what? Nobody cared because we don't know.
We don't do it on video.
We don't do it on video.
Yep.
I probably should. This work we go through. I even took a shower and combed my hair just for you tonight, pal.
He does look great, guys. So you guys are missing out.
Oh, look, I mean, look at that. Look at that strange jacket he's got on. It's DN. DN. What is DN?
Is that, Notre Dame.
As a Notre Dame shirt.
By the way, even the socks are Notre Dame. So,
okay.
All right.
Mario,
here come the Irish. So anyway, here we go.
Yeah, so, let's do it.
As we do with everybody, Mario,
yes,
thing
sir.
Of ours. So how did you get started in this thing of ours? Were you like watching RoboCop one day and you decided, dude, I got to do that? What up?
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny. I think it's more of like the typical, you know, I was a kid playing cops and robbers and just growing up like that. And I was always
okay, no, hold on. Which one were you?
I was always the good guy.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. I was always the good guy. I mean, obviously, sometimes we have to play the bad guy too when, you know, the little brother wants to be the good guy or whatever. That's fine though. But yeah, I actually got into it, you know, at that age, and all through high school, I was kind of thinking about what I wanted to do, and that was up there. And finally, I went to school, community college, and he was like, oh, you know, like, they were like, what do you want to do? And I was like, it was like instantly, I was like, I just want to be a cop.
Now, where'd you grow up when you said you were growing up? Where at?
So I grew up in Lincoln Park, Michigan. So it's about 15, 20 minutes outside Detroit. It's in the suburbs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And graduated from there in 2008. And I don't know if you guys want me to go into details about all of that stuff, like baseball player, things like that. You guys good with that?
Heck yeah, well, I mean, man.
Well, it's not like we need to know that you were babe in swaddling clothes, but yeah, give us a little background about yourself too. It's like, well, you know, when I was three, now we can skip that part, but.
Right. You got it. You got it. Yeah. So I grew up in Lincoln Park, Michigan, graduated from there in 2008. After that, I was a 4-year varsity baseball player. And after that, I went to community college in Flint, Michigan, which is about an hour north of Lincoln Park. And I played baseball there as well. And that's when they asked me, like, hey, like, what do you want to do? And I told them right after that asked me, I was like, hey, I want to be a cop. Like, okay, so we definitely have one of the best criminal justice systems as community college here in Michigan. I was like, okay, I feel like every school says that, but we'll go with it. So, yeah, I was a baseball player. And, you know, I went there for 2 years. And that's where I met my beautiful wife now. And
hey, hold up, but rewind. So what position would you play? Yeah.
I was a catcher.
Oh, right on. So was I, man. But how are your knees?
My knees now are a little creaky.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a little shot. Yeah, but I, you know, Morgan, I do lift a lot of weight stuff now, but yeah.
When he says catcher in baseball, that's different than the kind of catcher you were.
No, I was a catcher in baseball, Murph. You're thinking...
You know what? As a friend of mine said, hey, it's your story. You tell it the way you want to.
There we go.
Is this too late? Are we up too late for you? Because you're like going off the deep end already.
All right. No, I got a good nap today, buddy. I'm feeling good.
There we go.
Went to the gym, drank my protein drink. Life's good. Oh, me a new truck too. I forgot to tell you about that.
Oh. Hell yeah.
Very good.
There's we'll have to talk about it. Yeah, you were talking about doing that. So, all right. Anyway, but this is Mario's story. Do you mind? Come on.
Okay.
Come on, Murph. Come on, Murph.
You were playing catcher and you caught the catch of your life. Your wife.
Yeah, I did. Yep. I'm married to my wife now. We've been together for just over 15 years. And after that, after the 2 years of community college, I transferred to a Division I school. A Division I school offered me, it didn't offer me, I was offered a walk on position. So I walked on at a D1 school at Western Illinois University in Illinois, obviously.
Those aren't the Huskies, are they?
No, they're the Leathernecks. So it's a little bit smaller D1 school, but yeah.
The Leathernecks. You have to yell, you know, oorah every time you got onto the field or what?
No, I definitely didn't have to do that. Didn't have to do that. So I actually got redshirted, unfortunately, after I transferred. And I went the whole year without playing. So I was it was a little bit different. It was farther away from home than I wanted to be. It was about 8 hours.
Why'd you get redshirted?
So my degrees from my community college didn't transfer over in time for some reason. There was a deadline that they had to meet and the community college didn't transfer them over in time. And they had to redshirt me at that point. I thought it was going to be like, oh, hey, here's my degrees. But, you know, they didn't like that it was too late. So they just redshirted me for the year. Yeah. And after the year was over, I was like, hey, I talked to the coach. I said, hey, I think I'm going to transfer back home or I'm going to go back home. So I go back home and I transferred to a Division I school in Ohio called Tiffin University. It's a private school. And played baseball there for 2 more years. And after that, I didn't get right into the academy after I got out of school. I actually took a couple of years to get into the academy, but I'm not sure why. I don't know if I was discouraged about, you know, previous denials. I actually tried to get into the Secret Service at one point and they denied me. Obviously it was like my first position I was applying for. So, no prior experience at that point. And, it was pretty much doing random jobs up until I went to the academy. So I was doing like landscaping and I did
you talk about going to the academy, but did you have to put yourself through the academy or were you hired by an agency?
No. So actually Detroit puts you through the academy.
Okay.
Yep. So you get paid during that time and it's actually to go straight to Detroit. So I was doing loss prevention before that. And, you know, at that time I was going through the process of Detroit And it was about, you know, 2014 or 2015, I started getting into like personal development stuff. And I really thought like, okay, like this is really what I want to do. I really do want to be a cop. I really do want to be a police officer. I want to do some good in the world or try to do good in the world anyway. And, you know, it's during that time period, 2014, 2015, I was really going on a personal journey to just better myself. So like mentally wise, and that's what kind of led me to getting into the academy in 2017.
So when you applied, how many people were in your class when you started the academy?
Ooh, I want to say about 30.
Was that about average for Detroit or?
Yeah, it actually, like during the years afterwards, they progressively got smaller, obviously, for reasons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think our class was typically the last hard class. Because afterwards, like they all got, I would say soft in a sense. So there was no yelling. There was no like the stuff that that we went through. And
that's the good stuff.
That is the good stuff. And I thought that we would walk into the academy just to go down there for our yearly things. And it'd be quiet in there. I'm like, what is going on in here? I'm so used to like walking in here and there'd just be chaos. Yeah. But yeah, it was quiet in there. I love the academy. I was... I led all the marches down. I was calling cadence and doing all that stuff and getting people to go places. So it was pretty cool.
You know, when you hear that more and more, I mean, even the DEA Academy has really slackened off on the PT and so forth, I hear. But what it's not just a hazing type thing. It's to teach you how to control your emotions.
Yeah.
You know, they try to piss you off so you learn to control that anger. And you can do that when you get on the street. There's a reason behind all this. It's not just to screw with people.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's that's ultimately what you learn in there. They would say it all the time. They're in your face. They're trying to make you make rash decisions. But it's because like when you're out on the streets, you have to do that. You have to do those things. And people are going to call you names and they're going to say things to you that you don't like. But you know, you just got to deal with it and do your job the right way.
If you can't take it in the academy, dude, this is not the job for you.
You're going to have a hard time on the street. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's like the old childhood saying, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words can never hurt me.
Yep.
You know, people call you everything in the book, and you can still walk away from it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and a lot of people actually, you know, obviously probably with you guys as well, like a lot of people couldn't take it, and they would quit because of that, so.
Yeah, I was like the perfect cop, you know, I was...
and then at least
in my mind I was
it was a good time in the academy. And afterwards my instructors at the time and pretty much he came up to me, he goes you're probably one of the better well put together ones out of everybody, you know. My military creases were always on point and shoes were always shined.
Where'd this military career come in? I didn't hear about that.
The thing is I was never in the military.
Oh, but what he went to the university was at the Leathernecks, man. Had a bunch of Marines teaching him. This is how you put your creases in. Chesty Morgan.
Yeah. I had to teach myself how to do that. Yeah. And it was a good time. I really enjoyed it. Obviously like there's times where you're like, hey, I wish I could do that again because it was just fun. And you know, we had a lot of good times and we had a lot of fun times and obviously we got our ass beat a little bit, but it was a good time.
When you were doing loss prevention, can you say who you were working for back then?
Yeah, I was actually working for TJ Maxx.
Oh.
So yeah.
You chasing down them women stealing underwear or what?
Oh, it was. No, Spanx. I was getting people who were stealing $400 or $500 worth of merchandise at one time.
Wow.
Yeah,
well, that shit don't happen anymore because you can't stop anybody. They can steal $5,000 worth of crap and you can't do jack squat.
Hold the door open for them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny as it actually was right down the street from the precinct that I worked at.
Yeah.
Did the cops get
to know you?
For the city that I worked for, or in the city, yes. They pretty much told me too because I told him I was trying to become a cop and he goes, I would hire you right now if you were in the academy. He goes, I'd hire you right now. But yeah.
I just got to say, the little town where I was a cop back in 75, a guy that I went to college with, Dave Williams, one of my dearest friends, I haven't talked to him in years, but still, I mean, you know how we are. We go years without seeing each other. And then when we do see each other, it's like we were together yesterday. We took our first police test together. I got hired in the city and Dave was a loss prevention guy at a grocery store in a downtown area of this little city. It was about 25,000 people back then. And if you were working that zone down there, that area, you know, you might get a phone call and say, hey, Dave's after another one down there on Raleigh Street. Get down there. He'd be chasing. He chose to chase them down, man.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Those were the good old days, man, where you could chase people down, arrest them for doing stuff like that. Now you have to give them a participation ribbon and, you know, soothe their feelings and hope they don't sue you.
Yeah, I went a little bit past maybe the guidelines we were supposed to go. I wasn't going to put my hands on anybody like in that way, but I would definitely go a little bit farther than I was supposed to go. I would chase people down the, well, down the,
in the words of the famous Detroit cop, Axel Foley, he may have fractured a few laws.
just a few.
See, RoboCop and Axel Foley. I got both Detroit cop references in one episode. Look at that.
There we go.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and
we're not putting those on narco meter, I'm telling you.
Well, not Miami Vice, that's for damn sure.
We did that. Once is enough.
So yeah. what year did you actually start on the mean streets of Detroit?
So I graduated the academy in 2017. So October 2017.
How long is your academy?
6 months.
Yeah. Woo, okay.
Mm-hmm. So when you're in the academy, if you do something that they don't like or they just want to screw with you, did you have to write memos or letters or reports or anything?
Yeah, we had to write a bunch of stuff. I can't really remember exactly what they made us write, but they just made us write a lot of things out and just repeatedly. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, we would just write random things like a million times. I'm like,
third grade. I will not throw the, you know, write it on the chalkboard.
This has nothing to do with anything. I don't know what's going on. That was like the first half, but I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to get people to kind of get out of there. They're trying to figure out who's actually going to graduate and, you know, move on. So,
well, did you get in any trouble?
Oh yeah. Towards the end, obviously you know they can't do anything more to what they already did. So it's like a lot of the times we would just do a lot of funny stuff. Like actually the first story that I have for you guys was towards the beginning, and I wasn't calling Cadence at the time yet. We had just started, and I had walked out of the classroom and I was laughing, and the guy that was our, like, the main instructor, he was a Marine, so he was kind of crazy. And I walked out of the classroom and I was smiling. I was laughing because someone on the back said something stupid and it was funny. Mm-hmm. And as I walked out, he saw me laughing and he told me to fall out. So I fall out and he goes, since you think everything's so fucking funny, Rodriguez, he goes, I want you to get on your face and I want you to do push-ups until you can't do push-ups. And I want you to say ha 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 and count every time. So every time I got down in push-up position. I was saying, ha, 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 one, sir. Ha, 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 two, sir. Ha. And then I fucked up at like 10, and then he made me start all the way over. And I'm like, dude, this is like the worst time of my life right now. I don't even know what's going on. It was funny. And afterwards, I just like, he made me like run down to roll call. And it was honestly one of the funniest parts of the academy. I just, my classmates were cracking up. It was a good time.
You didn't laugh again the rest of the whole academy, did you?
Oh, no. I started laughing anyway.
Troublemaker. We got a troublemaker here, Morgan.
But you notice the way he started this. He said, well, one of the stories is. So
yeah.
It sounds exactly like he was, as we used to say, a recidivist.
Yeah, we would mess around with a lot of people because towards the end, they would start giving you all of your equipment. So you would start wearing your belt and you start wearing your, you know, your flashlight and your cuffs and stuff like that. And, you know, we had battle buddy systems. I'm sure you guys did the same thing. Like everywhere you went, you had a battle buddy. And I remember we were getting ready to walk out of the classroom. So we would line up at the front door and then your battle buddy would come up behind you. So we had the flashlights in the back, obviously. And so he gets ready to walk out and I turn the flashlight, I click his flashlight on strobe, and I let him walk down the hallway by himself, and he's walking down the hallway as the light is strobing off the ceiling. And all I hear is, what the fuck? And then he was like, where's your battle buddy? He turned around and he looks in. I'm just standing there. I'm like,
sorry, dude.
And then we just get railed. It's the funnest time. Like you understand, you get to a point where it's like, you know, they can do everything to you. They're not going to kill you. It'll be over at some point. It's just fun.
Yeah. Until you get your badge and credentials, that's, you know, just do what they say.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you're the type, you did the same thing I would do to a couple guys, like when I was on the police department, sometimes we'd get ride homes. They'd give you a ride home after, especially working a midnight shift, because, you know, most cops, we couldn't afford multiple cars. So we'd have one car, you know, and they'd give you a ride home. And one of the guys gave me a ride home one time. Rodney Bachman since has passed away. But he was, I was saying, hey, Rodney, because he pulled in the drive, and said, hey, up there, you know, if you keep an eye on that. And he turned to look. And when he did, I flipped the switch on the lights. So the lights were going on overhead. And I figured he would know this. He backs out of the driveway. He goes off driving down the street, red lights going on the top. So about 30 minutes later, I get a call, you motherfucker. He was driving down Main Street and cars were pulling over. He's trying to figure out what the hell is going on until somebody like pointed up at his room. Yep. He'd driven like 5 miles with his lights on and had no clue. So simpatico, bro.
Oh yeah. I've done that a few times, even driving. I'm like, why is everyone pulling over? And then my lights are flashing. Forget I'm like, oh, lights. What the hell?
Well, you know, cops are always pulling pranks. Even after you get on the job, you know, if you left your hat, you know, and you had a badge on your hat, we had the 8-point hats.
Yep.
And if you left your hat there while you went to your locker or the bathroom or something, you came back, if you didn't check, your badge will be upside down. And if you got out of the cruiser, you're required to put your hat on. Which didn't happen real often, but if it, you know, the only time you put your hat on, somebody's got your badge upside down. It looks like a clown, but it's always something going on.
You know what we used to do? We would take three, when I was a trooper, we had, you know, our assigned vehicles, our own cars. So, but every now and then you'd want to dick with somebody, you'd get the 3-hole punches and you do it during the summer. So you'd pour them all down the defroster vent. And then come winter, the first time they turned it on, it was like Christmas in July. Poof.
I've never done that, but I've heard about people doing that before.
There were some other things. I'm not sure about whether or not, I'm pretty sure the statute of limitations, but the other thing is too, I don't want to admit to it because then they know it was me. I don't want them to know it was me. So,
Some guys in the summertime, if you laid your hat down, they would spray mace on your hat band inside your hat.
Oh,
and then
no.
You get outside, you're working a wreck, and they start sweating. And the next thing you know, you got mace in your eyes and you can't see.
Then you rub your eye and it's like, oh my God, I can't see.
That one's messed up. That's a little bit too far. That's kind of funny.
This was the 70s.
Yeah.
You probably weren't even born yet.
I definitely was not born yet.
Oh, well, I can tell you weren't born yet because my training officer on the state patrol, a guy named Tom Witham, our division headquarters where we were assigned out of was out in the southeast part of town around nothing. There was like nothing out past there. It was about the DOT. And we're walking in one night and all of a sudden he goes, bang, bang. I'm a motherfucker. What's going on? He pulled out a 380. He saw like a varmint out there. So he took a couple shots at it.
Dang.
I thought we were...
Even we didn't do that.
Yeah, Tom, sorry about that. 143, his radio number was 143. Anyway, hey, back to our regularly scheduled podcast. So
yeah, here we go.
You graduate the academy. You're now hitting the main streets of Detroit. So tell us about Detroit at the time you were on. Tell us about how big was your department? How did they break up the city? Were they called precincts or beats or zones? Mm-hmm. You know, what was the lay of the land, so to speak?
Yeah, so we had precincts. We had 10 different precincts at the time, including headquarters. So I was at the 8th precinct, which is the west side of Detroit. So it was broken up by the sides, east side, west side, you know, stuff like that. So I was at the 8th precinct, which was known to be one of the most high crime, precincts of them all.
And is that the precinct that, Beverly Hills Cop started out of?
Maybe.
Was that the 8th precinct where, you know, Axel Foley, you know, was assigned out of, do you know?
Do you want to know something funny? I've never actually seen that movie.
What the fuck?
Really?
Yeah, I've never actually watched the movie before. So,
okay, I know we're stopping the podcast.
People are bailing right now. I'm sorry, guys.
We're stopping the podcast. You're going to go watch the movie. We'll reconvene here in 2.5 hours.
Yeah. But yeah, I know, hey, it was in basic. I know it was based in Detroit, though.
That'll be my bedtime, okay?
Yeah, there you go. Murph's going to be sleeping. Let's be careful what's out here. But yeah, so 8th precinct, it was connected to the 6th precinct. So we basically had two that are connected together. But obviously, the whole city's connected together. But the west side was known as one of the worst sides. But everyone's gonna argue that the east side was bad, the west side was bad. It was Detroit in general was just a absolute shit show.
How big was your department at the time, if you remember? How many sworn did you have?
Oh, I could not tell you. I know we had, I think we had about 1,000 or a little over 1,000.
Wow.
At
you
the
probably
time.
Needed double that probably.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, especially because we're riding doubles in cars. So like it's there were sometimes people would have to go out by themselves and it wasn't fun. So, everything was, it just depends on what area you were at. I know that we were in the one of the worst areas and we would just be in the shit all the time. I worked patrol for about a couple months and I saw basically these guys walk out in some green pants and some tack uniforms. I'm like, those are the guys I want to be. Those are the cool guys. Yeah. And I started talking to some of those guys and I got a chance to do a rotation back there, which is a special operations unit. And they liked me. It took me a couple months. You got to earn your greens. That's what they call them, is your green pants, mm-hmm, with your tack vest. And you got to earn that stuff just by working. And they knew I was a hard worker. They saw that. And I ended up staying back in special operations pretty much until after my shooting. So
how long were you on before you got into special operations?
Probably 4 or 5 months.
Well, that's pretty quick, isn't it? Because you're still wet behind the ears, so to speak.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was learning, but I think like overall, I'm a pretty quick learner. So like I understood how to do things properly. I understood, I did pretty well on the exams and everything like that. And they'd ask me questions and see how I would react. And yeah, they liked how I reacted. So yeah, it was a good time.
I'm looking here too. Now Detroit has 2,450 slots authorized.
Nice.
I don't know how short they are, but
yeah,
I doubt they have that many on the streets.
No, nobody does. No major city has, I would say is even close to being fully authorized.
Yeah. I would say half of those people are probably somewhere within the headquarters range or doing some type of work, desk work and stuff. Cause we do have a big headquarters area. So.
Big bureaucracy. We used to call them RIMFs. What a RIMF is? REMF?
Mm-mm.
Rear echelon motherfucker.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. They could push papers around.
Yep.
Kind of like Murph. Murph, you were a paper pusher.
Hey, I can push my camera around. I'll push it right off the ledge here in a minute.
He's like my cat. Knocks shit out.
So just knocking around a little bit.
you kind of foreshadowed it because we talk about you're going to be involved in a shooting.
Yeah.
So let's kind of bookend it before we get into it, because we want to talk about things that are leading up to it. So from the time you got on to the time you were involved in the shooting, how many years is that?
So it's 2017. I graduated. So the shooting was 2019.
Okay.
So 2 years.
Relatively. Okay. So let's talk about, we're going to work up into that, but let's talk about what you're doing during that time. So special operations, mm-hmm, what do you guys do? Do you respond to calls for service? Is it self-initiated? Are you doing targeted enforcement? What's the role of special operations?
Yeah, so special operations, so we would solely focus on narcotics and drugs, or it's narcotics and drugs, narcotics and guns. Mm-hmm. So people would say, oh, like, well, guns, we have the right to have guns. Well, these are guns that have scratch serial numbers and being carried by 6-time convicted felons and they don't have the right.
And that's kind of a problem,
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem in Detroit. And we would do calls if it was backed up, but that wasn't our primary. That wasn't our primary concern.
How did you get your assignments? Was it just self-initiated? Did you go out and do stuff, or did you work like with investigations or task force or, whoever to target people?
Yeah, we did a lot of everything. So we did, it was more proactive. So we would essentially go out there and conduct traffic stops or just initiate investigations and things like that. Or we would work with task force like CATS, which is our commercial auto theft unit, or we would do a prostitution sting where we would have one of our girls obviously act like a prostitute, and then we would go and do things like that. So, mm-hmm, we would do those from time to time, but mostly it was more proactive policing.
What, do you work in all night hours?
Yeah. So when I first started in special operations, it was 7 PM to 3 AM. Mm. But a lot of the time it ran over because we would just be working and we would have a lockup or just doing an investigation. So,
just out of curiosity, do you remember what your starting pay was there?
I want to say it was 47,000.
Yeah, I'm showing now a patrol officer starts at 64 up there.
Yeah.
And that's what? You've got places like that. We were just talking about this a while back. San Francisco was offering a $50,000 sign-on bonus, and they were paying $120,000. You mm-hmm. can't get anybody out there. They had the smallest classes in history.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, I've met some San Francisco cops too, and they are as dedicated and hardworking as anybody you've ever met in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But man, the shit they have to put up with is—it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I feel like that. I feel like a lot of. I know it's probably worse over there in California and stuff like that, but I feel like a lot of our officers are like that too. We have some hardworking dudes, some dudes who've known. Who lived in Detroit and just know the streets and, you know how to
It's their hometown, man.
Yeah. And they know how to do things and they do it the right way and they're just hardworking and they just end up getting, you know, just left to hang out to dry. So it's pretty sad.
The most important question right now is, were you a Lions fan?
At the time, I guess I was a Lions fan.
I guess not.
We got our answer.
At the time, I don't know. No, I'm not. Yeah, people think I'm weird, but I'm not really like, I don't really watch sports anymore. But yeah, I just
not even baseball.
Sometimes I watch baseball here and there, but it's I don't know. I have like a weird mentality now. It's like, and it's okay that people watch it. I'm not like bashing people that watch sports, but it's more like, oh, if I don't own it, I don't really care. I don't know. I just got other things I need to do, I guess.
Well, don't show up to a Notre Dame game then, my friend, because I will scream your head off. All right.
Do you not watch college sports either?
I do from time to time. It's very rare. So like if I know I have nothing going on for the day, I'll probably like turn some ESPN or something and watch some college baseball or I'll wait till it gets to like the College World Series or something like that and just watch.
Which is still, held in Omaha, right? So
yep.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, back to our regularly scheduled podcast. So you're out there working the main streets of Detroit. What were a couple of, let's talk about a couple of serious calls you had, then a couple of just really goofball calls you had. So what was like the first time you really got into the shit?
Oh, man. I'll just let you know the first, I can let you know my first call. I just know that we got into so much stuff in special operations. I can't really remember specific times of anything. I mean, I know there's a lot of times where I was in a lot of foot chases and things like that. I know some of those stories, but like the first time I can't really remember. I'll put my finger on that one. I just know my very first call as a patrol officer was a dead body with zip ties around its neck.
Now, was that suicide or homicide? Were you able to figure that out?
Yeah, I think no. I mean, I think maybe it was some sex. Maybe it was some sexual thing. Some
autoerotica.
Yeah, there we go. But it was a pretty crazy moment. It was kind of shell shocked. I was kind of shell shocked at the moment because
body you saw?
That was the very first, like, yeah, in person. Yes.
Did it just surprise you that Morgan knew what autoerotica was?
It kind of just went over my head, but now that you say something about it, back up.
As an instructor, behavior analysis and interview and interrogation, you have to know these things, Murph.
There's a reason we do this virtually and not in the same town. I'm in Orlando and he's in Virginia.
Yeah, you traitor's bastard. That's why you said you went up to the event instead of down to the event. Because if you'd still been in Virginia, you traitor's bastard, it would have been going down to the event.
Anyway, that is true. That is true.
We digress again. So first dead body. So what were the circumstances of that?
So they actually just apparently it was a homeless person and there was obviously some type of foul play in that and. They dumped the body on the side of the freeway. So 94 is one of the main freeways through Detroit. And they just up on the little hill right there, they just put the body at the top of it and it was just hanging out there. So it was kind of crazy.
Were you ever aware if they solved the case or not?
I'm not sure. Cause once we do initial investigation, detectives take it over and then we just kind of keep going and doing our own thing.
Yeah, because if it had gone to court, you would have been subpoenaed. Yeah, I mean, you would have had to testify. So
exactly.
Chances are probably not. Hey, the other thing too is just kind of out of curiosity is I've been to Detroit many times, you know, spoke at conventions up there and stuff. And the convention center, I will tell you now, is much nicer than it was years ago. I mean, they've done a lot of good work. But I had to stay over in Windsor, over in Canada. Because believe it or not, all the hotels were booked up. How much of a problem was the Canadian border for you guys at all? Much of an issue with crime or the things you were dealing with?
Yeah, I honestly couldn't say because that would have been more headquarters. The guys who work at headquarters or the downtown area. I never heard any stories or anything from anybody that kind of talked about anything like that. So,
but even like with you guys running into people, were you dealing with anybody that's coming across the border from Windsor, from Canada into Detroit? I mean, was that a big deal or not?
And not really, not where we were. No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of we just got a lot of stuff, a lot of foot chases, and
Well, you look like you're. I mean, how tall are you?
I'm 6 foot.
Okay, yeah, you mm-hmm. kind of got that. You got that catcher build too. So, but were you were you fast or were you like a catcher? You weren't that fast.
No, I was pretty fast. I was always the first one out of the car chasing after people, and sometimes I got burnt. There were some fast people. There, some people were really, really fast.
Well, of course, but when you hop out of the car, how many pounds of gear have you got on too?
Yeah, 30, about 30 pounds of gear, yeah.
Yeah, so you start off at a disadvantage. So the mm-hmm. ones that get caught are usually either really freaking overweight or mm-hmm. out of shape, you know, or only got one lung. Because if you can't outrun a couple of these guys that got 30... Now, I will tell you, there's a couple times... Have you seen that one video of like that... He's a pretty big cop, but a guy's running. This guy comes from like out of the frame, into the frame, passes all the other cops and tackles. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that video before.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. I actually had to chase somebody... This was a little bit later down the road, but I actually had to chase somebody with soft armor on, and then I had plates over top of it, and I actually chased this person and I caught him. And this was a skinny dude. He was fast, but then once I get going, I'm like kind of like a train a little bit, and I just get mm-hmm. chug-a-lugging, and then I'm going. And I caught him. I ended up catching that guy. It was pretty crazy. I was out of breath for sure.
Well, with that many pounds of gear on, the minute you tackled him, you crush him, right? You break the
ribs. Oh, yeah. I was just crushed. I just laid on top of him. I was like, I got you. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
But he probably didn't have the stamina either.
Yeah. Keep he going. Was, and he tried to hop a giant fence too, which kind of was stupid. So, like, at that time, I was catching up to him, and I just grabbed him and pulled him off the fence and laid on top of him like a fat guy. Just
it's okay, man. Get your breath back. He ain't going nowhere. Just hold still, Skippy. I'll get to handcuffing you here in a minute. So.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, there's a lot of crazy things that happens with other guys in the unit getting into shootings and us having to go down there, and just a lot of foot chases, man. It's just a lot of people who, because you know, like during the time we were trained to watch indications of like, oh, if somebody has a gun or not. So we would, you know,
right.
So a lot of the times we would, they called us the hop out boys. I don't know if that's a term you guys are familiar with, but like, that's what like people call us. Like people call special operations police officers, like, you know, plain unit guys. They just call them the hop out boys. Cause like you would talk to somebody real quick. They would give you a few cues and you would hop out on them and then you would, you know, do your thing and, you know, find their gun on them. But,
it's almost like a jump out squad. And then they had, when I was in Atlanta, the first time they had four men to a car units, and they called them Red Dog. And man, you didn't want to mess with Red Dog units.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much, they called us the hop out boys, and it was fun. And there's a lot of time you would get a lot of complaints and a lot of things like that. But I mean, they didn't go anywhere. It was all because, you know, we did everything the way that we're supposed to do everything and the way we were trained. So.
Well, that's the thing, you know, a good cop doing his job is going to get complained on.
Oh yeah. And that's one thing that they didn't understand. They didn't understand that at all. And it sucked. I mean, you can be a slug. You can be a slug on patrol and not do anything. And you're just getting all these accolades and stuff like that. Like, oh, you're getting the chief's award for
doing nothing.
Doing nothing. And then like, you got guys out here, like, you know, guys that are in my unit or any special operations unit in the precincts, and they're getting just complaints, and they're like, oh, well, you can't do that. I'm like, well, you know, if you go and you do and you talk about all these complaints and you realize that they're all not true, or they're
you have,
yeah,
unfounded. That's what they used to call them.
Yeah, unfounded. And I mean, like, so what's, I don't know what the problem is, but yeah, that's a little bit farther down our conversation too. But
well, no, but that's actually a good point, because many, you know what they started, because we're going to talk about body cameras. We're going to talk about cameras and other stuff, because there was something that the International Association of Chiefs of Police did. They did a study of the use of in-car cameras, because a lot of guys were saying, hey man, that's sergeant in a box. I don't want it there. But what they realized is that about 85 to 90% of the time, it substantiated what the officer said. And so many of the complaints, so there's like three findings you can come up with: sustained, not sustained. Sustained means, yeah, there was evidence you did it. Not sustained is like not guilty. It doesn't mean you're innocent. It just means we couldn't prove that you did it. And then unfounded means totally unfounded. The rate of investigations being closed as unfounded increased because of the use of video evidence. And so, I mean, it was significant, but that's the whole thing about complaints, is that, to your point, Murph, if you do your job, you're going to get some complaints. If you don't get any complaints, that's when I used to look at it and go, are you doing anything? I mean, you can get, somebody can complain about you. And it's like, how many times you've seen the video on YouTube where some person says, they profiled me, they did this, they said that, they called me all these names. And then you got the body cam video and it's like, never happened.
Oh, did were you committing that crime? Oh, maybe that's why they looked at you.
Yeah. Maybe you were doing something that you shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah. You're just picking on me because I'm insert, you know, term of choice there. And I would just say, you're just saying that because I'm white. Yeah. And that would kind of, you know, we would go. But again, back to our regularly scheduled podcast, back about you, because what we want to do is start working into what the event we're going to talk about.
Yep.
So, well, let's just talk about from a complaint standpoint. When you were doing your work, did you get many complaints? Average number, you know?
Yeah, we got a lot of complaints. A lot of them didn't go anywhere, but there are a few that that did go somewhere. I had to go down and you know, investigations and kind of talk about it or whatever. And they would play my body cam, and they would see a lot of the stuff that we were doing. We were doing the way we were supposed to do it, and then it would just end that way, and it would be unfounded, and. And some of them were kind of a little bit iffy because, like, you know, you're in the heat of the moment, your stuff's going on, you're chasing after people, and like people would get called down there for swearing at people. So like you catch somebody and you're like, you're calling them, you know, a motherfucker, and like get on the ground and all this stuff, and like you get a complaint about it, and then you're like, wait, I chased this guy because he pointed a gun at somebody and we saw him with the gun, so we chased him, and then we're swearing at him when we're down here. Like, I'm just kind of confused as to why that is. Actually, speaking of that, I had to go down to internal investigations for this. So someone was getting served a PPO, and I got handed the PPO at the time and said,
what's,
hey,
a PPO?
A personal protection order. So
So kind they of had like to go a temporary to, restraining order. Or
it, it's a restraining order, essentially. Yep. Yeah. And so I'm looking our stuff up in Lean, looking the information up in Lean at this time. And I'm looking where the address is or where this person is. Because, you know, some of the addresses that I have on there in Detroit is just, I'm sure in a lot of places too, is it's not the accurate address. Mm-hmm. It's not the right address. So we would have to go in and, you know, look for the correct address that's updated. And so I find it, and we go to the house, and I serve the PPO to the, or the person wasn't there at the time, but I get called down to internal investigations. I'm like, I'm kind of confused why I'm here. And she was like, well, you see, we have you for misuse of Lean. And I'm like, can you explain?
What's Lean real quick? Tell everybody what Lean is.
So Lean is a law enforcement information network. So that's basically where you can run all license plates, identification numbers, look up who lives in what house and things like that. So misuse of Lean is technically a misdemeanor. And I'm like, okay. So I had my rep with me at the time, and my union rep, and she's explaining the investigator, the AI investigators, and explaining to me, oh yeah, we got you down here for misuse of Lean. So like we're going through the motions, and I'm like, can you explain like what I did wrong? And she's like, no, you should know what you did wrong. I said, no, I don't know what I did wrong because I'm trying to figure out what that is. And she's like, oh, you ran this information incorrect. I said, I'm sorry. Like, what do you mean? And she like slid the transcript of the Lean transcript and slid it to me. And I looked at it. I said, I'm sorry. I don't see anything that's incorrect. And my lawyer goes to look at it. And my union rep, and she actually grabs it, or she won't like give him the information. And I'm like, so you're essentially like withholding evidence from my union rep to let you know what's going on. So it ends up being unfounded. But I mean, it goes back to like you're doing things that you should be doing, but for some reason, a lot of places find ways to just try to screw you over, or
well, you know, I tell you what it is that at some point, the bigger you get, and Murph, you know this better than I do. At some point, you get people in certain positions, they have to come up and do something to justify while they're there, why they are there. Because if they don't do anything, people start going, why are you in this position? So, you've constantly seeking ways to validate your existence. And one of the ways you do it is you dig up bullshit stuff to say, well, I opened up 14 investigations this month. And so, my response would be, how many of them were sustained? None. Right. How many of them were not sustained? None. How many of them were unfounded? 14. Seems like you're the problem, not the people the investigations were being opened up on.
That's absolutely. Yeah. Did you ever find out what it was you did? You know, they said you did wrong on that entry.
They said I ran the information incorrectly. I said, how? I'm just kind of confused as what you mean by that, because like if I ran someone's information and it came back correctly, that's mm-hmm. There's nothing here for you. You know, I can't say it's wrong because it gave me the right information of where I'm supposed to go, the address. Yeah. So, it was weird, and I ended up leaving, and then I never heard anything about it again. So, I was like, okay, well,
how do you run something? How do you run something incorrectly? You know,
I could not tell you. So, I know like there's different lines. So, like if there's a line, you have to put like your badge number or your, I forgot what it's called at this point. Like it's like your basically your employee ID number.
Yeah,
you put your employee ID number or your badge number, depending on whatever one you want, and then there's the information you want to fill out. You look up the person's name or you run the person's name, date of birth, stuff like that. But I mean, it was like, I'm just confused. And then I never heard anything about it again. So I really didn't care. So I was just like, this is weird. I'm confused. I don't know what to do.
Was this happening to other officers as well?
I'm sure. I know like two the other people that were with me did get called on there as well.
The reason we're spending a little time on this, because this is going to get into your mm-hmm. shooting, because I'm wondering if for some reason somebody's got a hard on for you, you know?
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. I just know that when people are proactive and they're actually trying to get bad guys off the street for some reason, it's like you get a little, people get a little like, I'm going to keep my eye on this person or I'm going to keep my eye on this person because whatever reason, politics.
I think some of it's political. It's like some people have no reason. Some people, the only way they can validate themselves is through the exercise of power. And one of the easiest ways to exercise power is to deny people something mm-hmm. or to find fault with what they do, as opposed to, hey, yep. the best leaders are the ones who stay in the background and give you all the credit and then take the responsibility when something goes wrong. But yep. it's hard to find leaders like that.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. You know, you've heard guys say, my first group supervisor in DEA, you know, he calls you in and he's like, you know, 5 foot nothing, and he's the boss, and he's mm-hmm. got the Napoleon complex thing going, and he's Italian, and he's loud, and he's from up north, and he's telling me, he's like, I got your back as long as you're right. Mm-hmm. I don't need you to have my back when I'm right. I need you to have my back when I've done something wrong. You know,
yeah.
I'm right. There's no problem.
Yeah, luckily,
scars on Murphy's back are the bus that ran over him several times.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, the sergeants that I had that I worked with every day were good ones. I can say that. But higher ups and you know people that are in headquarters and stuff like that. I mean, they weren't the best. So yeah.
You know,
I mean that calls into question. Have they ever been on the street? And if they have they been off the street so long they forgot what it was like to be on the street?
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, there's a lot of people that would say like, oh, this person never spent a day on the street or someone who gets promoted very quickly, like goes through, like, you know, I think you don't have to be on for a certain amount of time. You could take the sergeant's test whenever.
Wow.
And, or I could be wrong. It could be like you have to be on like a year or something, but there's very young sergeants. Like there's people who graduated with me that are now sergeants. This is 5 years ago, but it was before I left and mm-hmm. they became sergeants or they were taking the sergeant's test.
I can tell you, see, that amazes me because, at least on the state patrol, when I was on, you had to be on 5 years before you could even test for sergeant. Then to test for sergeant, you had to go to what they called the inbox session mm-hmm. assessment. So you would go up to the academy and they would do a 3 to 4 day assessment. They call it inbox. You'd have to handle certain things. Yep. And then only then you would get ranked, you know, and then. But you had to have 5 years on because I can tell you don't know shit until you got 5 years on. Quite frankly,
no. Yep. Yeah, I mean that's what I'm saying. Like it's a lot of you not knowing anything and you trying to go up to sergeant. I mean, honestly, I think it's just going to hurt yourself because you don't know what it's like and you're not going to understand where a lot of the officers are coming from.
I don't want to disagree with you. It's not going to hurt themselves. You know who it's going to hurt? It's going to hurt people like you. It's going to hurt other people because they don't know how to make the right decisions. They make the wrong decisions for the wrong reasons, you know, and they get somebody hurt. So,
I like that. Yeah. And it's there's a lot of crazy stuff.
Don't rule you like that, but this is our podcast. So we can do whatever
absolutely.
The fuck we want.
You can do whatever you want. Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm just going to go. I'm going to head out.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to sit right there because we got to get into the rest of the, as Paul Harvey said, the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the rest of the story now. So here's what we want to do. Let's start setting context for your shooting.
Sure.
So give us the day that it happened.
So it was May 19th, 2019.
All right. So, and this is going to be pre-pandemic, pre, you know, COVID, all that bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. So don't have to worry about wearing a mask and all that other stuff. So tell us that day, like, just tell us what's going on. What's been going on? What are you assigned to do? You know, how are you? Who's with you? Are you a two-man car, you know, et cetera. So just start setting context for us.
Yeah. So we weren't given any specific assignments during that day. It was just the normal patrol, be proactive, you know, start some investigations, you know, try to find some guns or some drugs.
So what time did you show up to work?
So this was I think we actually came in a little bit early that day. It might've been like 6 PM. It was, you know, a little bit, it's summertime. So it was a little warm out and it was usually when stuff pops off. And so we're a three-man car. So I have I was jump man at that time, and I have my partner driving, and then we have someone in the back seat as well.
What's the role of the person in the back seat? Just in addition,
yeah. Because I mean, obviously, we're like searching for bad people. We're essentially looking to get into shit. So I mean, like we're gonna have some extra people, and you know, we didn't have a normal scout car either. It was like, there was no cage, there was no anything. It was just a back seat. It was an Explorer, and it was the black cars. You know, just like you've probably seen those before. It's marked, but it's unmarked. It's, you can see the reflection of Detroit police and on the side and things like that. It wasn't a normal patrol car. But yeah, it was normal. It started off pretty normal, and you know, did a couple of traffic stops between here and there, and did some investigations. Maybe wrote some tickets, just normal stuff. And and that's when. Weird stuff started to happen. So yeah, we can get into that.
Yeah, well, let's walk into that. So let's talk about the event that happened. So set the stage for us. What were you doing? You know, what kind of a stop was it? Was it a traffic stop? You know, a Terry stop? You know, stopping a person? Kind of start walking us into that.
Yeah, absolutely. So so the area that we were in was close to like the worst side of our precinct, which is Greenfield and 6 Mile Road. And I know a lot of you guys won't know, but I'm just kind of doing that from my own memory. And we had pulled down an alley. So, you know, obviously a lot of people, a lot of bad guys and a lot of, you know, people who are just hanging out in the alleys. That's just what we look for. Big groups of people, things like that. And, you know, just roll by them, kind of see what's going on. And then just talk to a few people. And we had pulled down an alley. And right when we're getting towards the end of the alley, there's a car that pulls down, and a lot of people from Detroit, they don't know how to change headlights. So what they do is they just blare their high beams on everybody.
So when this is happening, what time of evening is it now?
So at this time it's about 10:30. It's okay. Probably like at the right before the investigation, it's probably like 10:20, 10:25. And so PM. And so we're pulling in, he's got his high beams on, which is an infraction in Michigan. But I don't know if it is anywhere else, but in Michigan it is. So he had pulled into a parking spot. We're right behind an apartment complex. And he pulls into a parking spot. We kind of pull up behind him a little bit, and we get out. We start talking to him.
Hey, hold on a sec before you do that. When you say you're pulling behind him, give us an idea too. Do you turn your lights on? How does he know you're the popo?
So obviously we have our gear on. It says police. Everything says police. And he saw us anyway. He's well, like, we were coming head on. So that's how we knew he had his brights on. Mm-hmm. So okay. He pulls in, he sees our car. We got the front grill, the whole thing. Everyone knows our car. We got lights on top. And on top of the windshield. And he pulls into the spot, and we get out to approach his car. We didn't activate lights at the time. And we were just going to talk to him. We're just going to let him know, like, hey, like, whatever. And so I'm on the passenger. I'm on the jump side. So I get out on the passenger side. And as I'm approaching that side, I give a thumbs down. And,
this stupid thing does that. Real quickly, when you guys do this, how often do you call out all your stops all the time? Does dispatch know where you're at?
Yeah. So at the time, what we did was we would initiate an investigation, or we would call it out as we're doing the investigation, or if something, whatever, if it was going a normal way, we would just go back into the car, initiate our own stop, and then go over the radio and say, "Hey, we're here and here." And then that was it. Just to let everybody know. We didn't have a chance to do that at the time. And partially that could have been on my fault. I should have called it out. But so I'm on the jump side. I'm on the passenger side. And my two partners are on the driver's side. But as I'm approaching the vehicle, I see movement in the car. So I see him taking his jacket off.
And when you approach the vehicle, are you on the passenger or the driver's side?
No, I'm on the passenger side. So I'm approaching. Okay. So the way that I got out and that we parked essentially right behind us. So I'm walking around our car and I can see his car parked in the spot, which he was head on.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, he pulled in from the front. And as I'm approaching, I see him taking his jacket off and I see a bunch of movement.
Well, and that's what I hate to interrupt you. That's what I'm trying to say. You guys were facing each other. So when you got out on your passenger side, you're actually approaching the driver's side of the car, right?
No. He pulled in head first.
He pulled in head first. So you're pulled in directly behind him.
Right. Got exactly.
It. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm approaching the passenger side. So he's taking his jacket off. I let them know. I said, "Hey, he's moving. Just so you guys know." And because that's what we do. We just call everything out. And I could tell by the way he was reacting, something was a little off. And so I come up to the passenger side. His girlfriend or his baby mama, whatever you want to call it, is in the car. She's in the passenger seat. I tell her to roll down the window. She rolls the window maybe down quarter of the
way.
A
few inches.
Yeah, nothing crazy. So my partners are talking to him on the driver's side, you know, just talking to him a little bit. And my partner asked him if he has his license on him. No license. So Michigan, arrestable offense, misdemeanor. And there's part of our investigation. So my partner's asking for his license. The guy gets a little bit, you know, what the perps do. They're asking for supervisors. They're saying, "Oh, you can't do this, da, 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 da." So my partner wanted to get him out of the car at the time because that's, you know, with no license, arrestable offense, we're going to get him out of the car. And just to talk to him a little bit, and he won't get out of the car. He's requesting supervisors. And my partner sees an opportunity to actually reach in to the car, into the door and try to open the door from the inside.
So at this point, they've got the vehicle locked. They're not letting you in, right? Just the window's cracked a little bit.
Exactly.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds almost like what the sovereign citizens do. You know, kind of the same thing. You know, they don't want to deal with you. They keep the windows rolled up. They make you really work for it.
Yep, exactly. And I mean, and that goes with the whole like requesting supervisors and saying, you know, like, "Oh, whatever." Like it's just delaying the process, the inevitable of what's going to happen, essentially. So my partner goes to open the driver's side door, and he actually does get it open. And as he opens the door, the guy puts the car in reverse. And the way our patrol car was, essentially, you know, I'm not sure how to explain it, but where he throws it into reverse, and he basically traps my two partners on the side as he puts the car in reverse. And the guy who was talking to him, my partner who was talking to him, gets smashed up against our push bars as the door like basically folds, and he rolls onto the ground in front of our scout car. So I basically had run around.
So your partner is hit by the perp's car.
Exactly. They technically both were, because I know my other partner had either dislocated his shoulder or he had like some type of injury to his shoulder.
But before we even get into the shooting, what we've got already is two police officers assaulted, aggravated assault of a police officer because a vehicle is a deadly weapon.
Yes. So technically, it was attempted murder already on two police officers, the way he was doing everything.
And folks are wondering why we're dragging this out a little bit. There's a reason we're dragging this out. It's going to make sense when you hear the rest of the story. But that's why I'm trying to capture these details now so people understand the context of what's going on right now.
Right. So at the time, my partner falls over. He's in front of our scout car as well right now. And my other partner is essentially on our driver's side of our scout car, and I had run around. So I'm actually facing head on I'm looking at the guy through the drivers, through the windshield. So I see him get out. I see him start to get out. He unbuckles his seatbelt or whatever he did, and he runs out and he goes towards the apartment complex, which is, if I'm facing, I'm looking at him, is on my left side. And at the time, my partner had seen him reaching in his waistband, and my partner that was on the ground had fired a few shots at him from there. And then as he's running, my other partner is running around. He is running towards him. He yells, "Gun, gun, gun." And so I'm also running towards the apartment complex, and I'm drawing my pistol out. And as I draw, the guy is approaching the door to the apartment complex. He pulls on the door. The door's locked. So as he pulls on the door, I'm coming to run up. And as I'm running up to him, he turns around and he sees me. He sees me, and then he shoots. He flicks.
Stop here for a second before you go any further, because what I want people to understand too is, up until this point, you guys were wearing body cameras, right?
Yeah, our body cams are activated.
Body cams are activated. That's so you're capturing everything from, you know, when the first gunfire happens, the vehicle backs up and he goes running off. You've got this all on body cam.
Yeah, it's on our body cam as well as our dash cam. And okay. Yeah, and so he turns around and he flicks around at me. You know, his little ghetto shoot, and he hits me just below my vest. So I see him pointing, and we'll go back a little bit. I see him pointing towards me, and so I'm trying to get off the X. I'm extending my weapon out at the time to fire, and he fires one off first, and it hits me below my vest.
Hey players, that is the end of part one. Part two comes out, as always, on Tuesday. In the meantime, go check us out at Game of Crimes on Twitter, at Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and the Instagram. Also, go check out our website, gameofcrimespodcast.com. We've got a lot more information there, including our book list. Any book written by our guests will be listed there. In the meantime, go check us out also, patreon.com/gameofcrimes. It's where we put a lot more content you won't hear on our regular podcast. We go into a lot more topics, and folks, it is a lot of fun. So go check us out, patreon.com/gameofcrimes. In the meantime, everybody stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow for part two.